Last weekend, I taught the Care Providers Day at Spirit Rock. Some of you were there, and we have, around a couple hundred people come, and it's really a wonderful day where we thank the care providers in our community. It's a non-fee day at Spirit Rock. You just come because we're asking you to come so we can have the opportunity to thank you. And then I left that day long, dashed to the airport. The dash turned out to be very complicated because of traffic problems at various places along the way. So I found myself running through the airport because the flight was leaving from the international gate, even though it was a domestic flight, and I'd entered at the wrong place. So here I am. I'd gotten a bit of a sinus problem and some sort of chest cold from a previous trip, and here I am running through the airport carrying two bags. I'm thinking, you know, this doesn't really solve. There's not so much equanimity in this. I'm laughing about that. And so I coughed on the way on my trip. I coughed like two-thirds of the way on the airplane because my lungs got inflamed. So people throughout the airplane were passing little things to me, thinking, oh, my goodness, what must he have or something. And I was very sorry about that in terms of them, but did not get in a bad mood over any of this. So I arrived where I was going. And then I'd come there because I'd been persuaded to facilitate a strategy meeting for an organization on Sunday. And I did this despite this is supposed to be a year that I'm not volunteering as any kind of a leader, any kind of service role. I'm supposed to just be teaching this year. This is my year of break. But nonetheless, I was persuaded that a particular skill set I had would really be useful in this situation, and there wasn't a good substitute for me. So off I trotted to do this. So we had a very wonderful day, actually, where the leadership of this particular organization found themselves coming together in a way that was really quite beautiful and maybe a little bit of a surprise to them. And so then I dashed back to the airport, and I get on the plane, and it turns out the plane is broken. They loaded us knowing the plane didn't work. They were still assuming somehow they were going to get the plane to work. But it turned out this plane had not worked for some hours, and they had repeatedly taken other planes rather than this plane, so that we were really not handled it in a skillful way. There was no point to this. So after 30 minutes, it turns out they've got to let you off the plane if it's not working at all. So they let us off the plane. I go running to the other end of the airport, get the last standby seat to get me back here, somewhat late at night by this point, in order to be here to have an early morning meeting on Monday with a national effort that I'm being part of, which again was one of these service things I got talked into in terms of this. And my feeling about all of this was, for my own benefit, it would have been better not to be doing this. But for the benefit of the whole, it's probably wise. And so what is the deciding point? What is the balance in terms of these things? And I say this as an introduction to tonight's exploration, which is around the first of the four paramis, or so-called perfections, a word I do not enjoy. I feel as though it gives the whole wrong tilt to what the paramis are. In our tradition, there are 10 paramis. In the Tibetan tradition, there are 6 paramis. And they play a more important role in the Tibetan tradition than they do in the Theravadan tradition. But and there's, because in our text, they're only referenced a couple of times, so there's not really a record of the Buddha saying them quite the way that they've been organized by the commentaries. The paramis, or these perfections, start with generosity. Generosity, you know what that word is, dana. And then ethical behavior is the second parami. This is called sila. And then renunciation. Renunciation, this word, nakama. It's not talked about so much as nakama, but renunciation. And then the fourth is wisdom. And it's these four we're going to be focusing on tonight. Generosity, sila, renunciation, and wisdom. Wisdom is panya. But then the rest of them are energy, having perfecting this ability to have energy, to control one's energy, to direct one's energy. Patience, kanti. Truthfulness, sukha, saka. And then resolve, loving kindness, and equanimity. Don't have to remember those or anything like that. And they're easily findable on the web and many different descriptions and talks of them. But the idea of parami is that there develops within us qualities. Qualities of what? Qualities of character. And these qualities of character come about in response to situations in our lives. So from these qualities, we respond in a way that is helpful to others. We respond in a way that we would like to be able to respond, we would aspire to respond, or at least we're grateful when other people respond that way towards us. When you're in a snowstorm going up to the mountains and someone stops to help you, put on the chains, or your car's broken down on the highway and someone stops, or someone lets you in a traffic line when you can't get in. Those responses, like that of the characters, someone helping out, someone standing up for you when you can't stand up for yourself, someone honoring an agreement that has been made when they could get away without honoring it. That kind of response is coming out of character, being telling the truth, being real. All of the kind of persons that you appreciate being around, they have one or more of these great paramis. Someone who's very patient with you and learning something, they have that parami of patience. And so we're very appreciative of receiving the benefit of their character. We, in turn, develop these paramis in ourselves, and others are the benefit of our having attained these paramis. You get the basic idea of that? It is not self-referenced. It is actually for the benefit of others. But the most... person who receives benefit is ourselves. It's one of these paradoxes. We are perfecting these, we're developing these characteristics for the sake of others, because it is said that this is what a Buddha has, is these characteristics of Bodhisattva. But in fact, then it benefits us. So the reference to this is not me or I, but rather this qualities of who what we wish to offer to the world in this way. I refer to them personally sometimes as attainments, because you can't really, they're not achievements. It doesn't feel right. It just doesn't feel right. I know people that have really great development in a number of these paramis, and it doesn't feel like an achievement. The trouble with the word attainment in the Theravada tradition is that's used in relation to the finer jhanas. The immaterial jhana states that would be referred to as attainments. So that word's sort of taken, but I nonetheless borrow it for this purpose. But maybe aspirations is a word we could use. Maybe that word attainment is okay, because we start to see in ourselves, if we practice, if we're serious about living our practice in daily life, or just because out of our love for people, or just role models we've had, or we were born with this as a particular trait, we start to see that there are levels of it that occur. We become a more patient person. We become a person with greater resolve. And we know it. We know this is true. We can feel it in us. We may be quite surprised that I can think of myself in terms of patience. I never thought of myself as a patient person. But many, many people would describe me as being patient. And it would be accurate. That's what's so amazing to me, is that it would be accurate. I am a person that moves towards the goal. And so I think of the resolve, not the patience. But nonetheless, it is, as I actually observe my behavior, yes, it would be accurate to say there is some level of patience that has occurred. But I would never say that I have achieved patience. That would not be true at all. I had no interest in achieving patience. I wanted results. So it would not be accurate to say that. And the resolve, even, which I was, my earlier circumstances in life, my response to my earlier circumstances in life was one of resolve. I developed resolve. I must have had some genetic propensity towards resolve, because I didn't have role models of resolve. But as a little boy, I had great resolve. And I liked that resolve. I identified with it in a certain way. But I wouldn't even say that I achieved resolve. The resolve came about because of conditions and my participating in response to those conditions. Again, you see the difference. This will actually matter to you if you get interested in these kind of characteristics. One way to understand why they're interesting, why they're worthy of our attention, is that they provide an opportunity. When you have them in mind, they provide an opportunity for meaning in situations that would otherwise only involve frustration or defeat or a sense of wasted time or a sense of being taken advantage of. I remember 25 years ago now or something, talking with a teacher that I greatly admired about a situation. And the teacher said, "Well, you know, I don't know if I'm making any difference or not in terms of that situation, but I am developing the power of me of patience." And I was really impressed, because that was true. I could feel the truth in his statement. He was aware of this, and so therefore he was taking a very frustrating situation, which I was being drawn into very reluctantly, because I was going, "This is not going to go anywhere." But then when he restated it that way, I was going, so maybe it doesn't matter if it doesn't go anywhere. Maybe it doesn't matter at all, because I, like him, I valued a possible outcome. And so at least I was standing for that kind of an outcome within the community. And maybe that was enough. And maybe it would take 40 years before there was an outcome like that. But in the meantime, somebody had to be holding the values. And so the patience is just to be patient with no results. Start to get a feel for this. So that is one way to understand why to get interested in this. Being super person is not a way to get interest in this. "Oh, I'm going to be so dazzling to everyone." That's the making it me or mine or I. Being a super person is not helpful in this, in the way of thinking about it, in my experience. And it is very tedious being around someone who is very pleased with their parmes. Very tedious. So I can save you the role of being the tedious person. It is also genuinely an opportunity to develop your character. And it's not so easy as adults to develop character. A lot of the regular kind of character development happened in our earlier ages. But this is like a chance to do it all over again. We're just holding these ideas. We interpret our experience from the perspective of these paramis rather than from the perspective of getting what we want. Even if what we want is good for other people, we're not interpreting strictly from that, but from the offering itself, from the value holding in this way. Very useful for this development of character. And the development of character in this way provides a sense of groundedness, a sense of well-being, a sense of authenticity, and of a through line. So very useful to have within the greater response to conditions this idea of the development of these various paramis. This is for those of you who are more the sutta readers. There's so otherwise just sort of let this little next 2 minutes float by you here. You know, in the Eightfold Path, in terms of wise understanding, there's two levels of understanding. The regular level of understanding in terms of life, and then these absolute truths. In the same way, there's two kinds of truths. There's this that relate to the paramis. There's this paramatha, this sakha, this ultimate truth. And then there is this the kind of regular truth, the vihara sakha, or the samyutta sakha. This kind of conventional accepted truth, and the paramis. This teaching about paramis is not directly about liberation. Because again, the Buddha was not teaching this, at least in our Theravada tradition, in terms of ultimate liberation, cessation, the final freedom of letting go. So this is a relative truth about how to live the Dharma in daily life, how to have well-being in daily life. One way to understand these two truths is that one is the direct teaching about full liberation, full freedom, fully letting go of greed, hatred, and delusion. And the other is the inference. This is inferred truth, so that it is still a profound truth that leads, if one goes into it, through the implicit, instead of the explicitly saying, that it's inferred, it's implicitly saying the way to liberation. So as you're hearing this talk, those of you who have more practice, listen to it that way too. Listen for the clues that are contained in talking about the paramis in this way. And I say this to you around this. I could say it to you around any talk here, because so much of our Sunday evening focus is on living the Dharma in daily life. There's an implicit path to ultimate liberation in living the Dharma in daily life. It's implicit. So I just wanted to take this opportunity to say that to you. So, focusing on these first four, the paramis of generosity, of sila. So generosity is dana. It's focusing on dana, sila, renunciation, and wisdom. And this is what the Visuddhimagga, this a text that was written some hundreds of years after the Buddha, states about, that's heavily referenced in a lot of Theravada teachings. This is what the Visuddhimagga says about it. As the great beings are concerned about the welfare of living beings, not tolerating the suffering of beings, wishing long duration to the higher states of happiness of beings, and being impartial and just to all beings, therefore they, one, give alms, that means dana, generosity, to all beings so that they can be happy without, get this, without investigating whether they are worthy or not. Generosity without investigating whether they are worthy or not. Just see how this is landing with you. Two, by avoiding to do harm to them, they observe morality. So by avoiding doing harm, this is great beings, they avoid doing harm to other beings, they observe morality by this avoiding harming them. Three, in order to bring morality to perfection, they, this great beings, train themselves in renunciation. Why would they have to train themselves in a renunciation in order to avoid doing harm? In one sense, this is said that a renunciation is the way one perfects the generosity and the sila by renunciation. And then fourth, they, in order to understand clearly what is beneficial in injurious to beings, they purify their wisdom. So they purify wisdom in order to know what is harmful and not harmful to other beings. This is Panya wisdom. This is the fourth of the paramis. So there's dana, sila, renunciation, this word nikama, and then panya. These are the four we're looking at tonight. So as you hear this, how does it feel to you? Does this strike you as the way you would say this? What do you notice? What do you notice about the way these four are presented? Anything that just struck you? It could be anything that you might say. And can we have a microphone for this? Right over here. Let's see.
Well, what I notice is when someone had said a while ago, it doesn't matter if the beggar is worthy or not. It's your generosity that's important to give. So it's not for you to judge if he's going to go spend it on coffee or alcohol or whatever. And that really released me to just give to people that were standing on the corner that I didn't know what they were going to do with it, but I felt happy to.
Okay, so you agreed with that,
yeah.
In effect. Thank you.
I'm happy to have the opportunity to be generous.
Right. Thank you.
I was going to say the same thing. It's just okay. Without judgment.
Okay. Anyone take another view? But go ahead.
I want to talk about renunciation a little bit, because mm-hmm. It's not something I ponder often. Are you talking of renunciation of self or... selfing, ego?
So the question about renunciation, what is renunciation? That renunciation, you would renounce the wanting mind in yourself that allowed you to be generous. You would renounce the sense of scarcity in yourself that allowed you to be generous. You would renounce the sense of judging mind that would allow you to be generous. You would renounce wanting what you want that would allow you to be to have morality, to have sila, rather than to do whatever you want to other beings to get what you want. So it's that kind of renunciation. A renunciation of you renounce harming and you renounce the kind of wanting mind that stops you from having generosity towards others. It does not mean martyrdom. It does not mean harming yourself for the benefit of other beings. The gentleman first.
I was curious to hear more about purifying wisdom. I've never thought of wisdom as needing purification. Mm-hmm. I mean, I thought of it as something that's developed through teachers and community, but that was very new.
So there's the term is satipanya, mindful wisdom, and yeah, that's not used in this text, but that's the term. So why would there be mindfulness and wisdom? Because wisdom can be used. You can be very wise in a way that really is sort of being sly or being manipulative. You can be wise about human behavior and then use that kind of wisdom for manipulative purposes. They're really smart people who could do a lot of good in the world, but actually don't do good in the world because they're interested in their own glorification or their own just power trip. I mean, one thinks of all the dictatorships around the world and the things that people use to maintain their power in that way. So this is wisdom, and this is repeatedly true in the Buddhist teaching. It's wisdom towards this. But to be able to discern the difference between suffering and non-suffering and to see why you would choose non-suffering over suffering and see how you would perfect the ability to choose non-suffering over suffering. So you got to know the difference, you got to see why it matters, and then you got to see how to be able to choose that. Because it's not so easy for us to choose that. We get angry, we want things, we have, you know, hormonal urges, we have We have emotional conditioning. We have habits of mind that are not so skillful. We have trigger points. We get very sanctimonious, you know, and easily justify killing for peace and so forth. So it's not that easy. So that's the kind of wisdom that's being referred to. So her next.
What you said reminded me a lot of the equalness of metta. When I practice metta, I feel like you kind of have to practice all of those in order not to, in order to evenly spread
right.
metta. So it seems like all of those touch on metta.
Right.
Metta touches on all
yes.
of those.
All the paramis, and metta is one of the paramis, loving kindness is one of the paramis. They all are interacting with each other, and they're like a whole. Because as you have loving kindness, you have more generosity. But having generosity it also builds the loving kindness. So you can see them as a, and it's often taught as one perfection leads to the next and the next. But you can also go backwards, or you can treat them as a circle or this entwined, everything's connected to everything else way with this. So, next question, and if you have an answer that's still to this, is there anything, as you hear these four paramis, is there anything that comes up for you in the way of confusion or disagreement? Do you go, no, that doesn't feel quite right. Is there something that like suiting it into your life and in daily life? Has anything come up? So over here, if you will, please.
So I was thinking about the question of generosity and just giving. And what I realize is that there's some discernment I use because my time is finite, my resources are finite. So before I give to a charity, I check and see that it's not 90% of it going to administrative costs. I mean, I look at those things. And even just, I must say, sometimes even with people, I only have so much time. And so I usually think about what's going to be of the best benefit, best use of my time as well. And there's people on the street sometimes, if they say they're hungry, I've gone and bought them a sandwich rather than giving them money. And that has to do with my family of origin, drinking too much, and I don't want to give them money to have them do that. So yeah, I have to say there's some areas where I have to have some, I have to stop and think
right,
about it.
Right. Thank you. So this is the wisdom part. She was talking about the wisdom part in relation to the generosity, you see. So, for instance, I will not give money to someone on the street that's begging in a way that's intimidating to people. I will not reinforce that behavior. Yeah, I'm not saying whether they're worthy of the money or not, but that behavior, I do not want to reinforce that behavior. I'm very clear about that. I don't. That's my values. And I'm not saying I'm right. I'm saying they're my values. So I'm not saying that nobody should give to people on the street that are... I'm not making that kind of statement at all, because maybe I'm completely wrong. But they're my values as best I understand them right now. So there is a level of discernment here, and that's what I'm wanting to bring out. So if you'll go back over there to that gentleman.
I like the sense that an individual is worthy independent of what their behavior is, what their intentions are. There's the quality of non-judgment, that simply everyone is worthy, everything is worthy of respect, of love. And so there's a kind of a deeper quality of generosity. And then the question is, what is being generous to that person? What will we serve them? So it's not giving them money or not giving them money. How do you express the generosity in a way that people serve?
And that's the wisdom. That's the wisdom. And that's why of these, I like to group these first four together. I used to just do the generosity and the sila and the renunciation together. But then as I worked with it more, I started grouping wisdom with it. I had another little arrangement and I taught it a different way, but I've ended up thinking that wisdom really belongs with this grouping in this way, because you can't do all 10 in a talk. So you've got to group them somewhere or another. If we can keep going, Wayne. Right here, this gentleman had his hand up. Sorry, not yet.
I like the part of the not judgment, and that's a tough one for me, because I see people begging and I think, okay, what are you going to do with this money? But having said all that, what I'm looking for in these four are the balance. Mm-hmm. How each one balances each of the other one. And that's one of the things you said in the very beginning was how you were caught up between the decision to help other people and help yourself. And there's a balance that I think I search for in that kind of activity. And the paramis, I'd like to talk a little bit more about the balance.
Okay. So one thing before we go to someone else. This issue of discernment in relation to the paramis is quite complicated in actual execution sometimes in life. I have involved myself in helping a lot of people in life, and whether or not that has always been wise to do in the first place, and whether or not the way I did it was wise or not, should I have done more or should I have done less? And I have actually found this to be unknowable in many instances. I do not know if I've been helpful or not. It's not so clear. So there's a kind of humility that is part of this. And that's why if we make it me or mine, or it's about I, then we want to be right in what we've done. But lots of times we don't know. We just don't know. And I'm in a situation right now where I'm involved in helping someone. And it's not clear at times, am I empowering that person in self-destructive behavior, or am I supporting that person through a rough time? I don't know. The Dharma helps us live with not knowing, with don't know mind. You follow that? Because it pulls us out of result thinking and living according to intention, moment to moment. And that is so valuable. It doesn't make me less wise. It empowers wisdom, but sometimes the wisdom is not perfected to the degree that one can know. So that's the truth of the level of wisdom in regard to this situation. So, and again, very specifically, and right now in a situation. So, in my life, and so that allows a kind of comfort. Otherwise, one goes into cynicism or a kind of fantasy thinking or self-justifying or defensiveness. There's all of these ways, if we're going to be vulnerable as we help others, it's not that easy to stay vulnerable while helping others. And this attitude can allow that to happen. We don't want to lose our own vulnerability. We don't wish to lose our own innocence. We don't want to be cynical. We want to have a kind of innocence that, and other talks I've referred to as a wise innocence or experienced innocence. But we don't want to lose our innocence. We don't want that to happen to us, because that innocence has so many wonderful attributes to it in itself. It's a fresh mind. It's beginner's mind. It's the opposite of cynical mind. So now we'll have your comment.
Thank you. I'm wondering how you discern whether somebody's action is aggressive or as you said, I forgot the word you used, but if a beggar is intimidating, is the word you use. How do you discern whether an action is intimidating or not?
Well, for myself, I smell it as violence. That there's a hint of violence in it. And it's just, in my part, it's just a feeling sense. And it's not based on anything other than that, that there's a sense of, is there violence in this ask? And I just don't support violence. But I'm not concerned, I'm not trying to, I just do this best I can with that. So I want to stop with the questions for a moment, then we will come back to it if we have time. I want to invite us to turn this consideration the other way around and have each of us ask ourselves, do we want to be accountable to ourselves in relation to keeping in mind, I'm looking for the right words here, keeping in mind the existence of the paramis. Do we wish to be accountable? Do we wish to have in mind the patience and persistence and generosity? Do we wish to have these characteristics in mind? Do we wish to say that, no, I am interested in the development of my character, whether I am 25 or 65 or 75 or 55? Do we wish to have this in mind? Not as a commandment, but as a relationship to ourselves, as to how we wish to be relating to ourselves as a person of growth, a person of becoming, bhavana, this becoming aspect of the Dharma. Bhavana is the whole developmental aspect. In another teaching, it is the teaching of silas, of sila, of dana, and bhavana. These are the three categories. First you have generosity and you have sila, and then you develop. You've perfected those first two to some degree before you're really ready to practice. And so this is a question for each person, for each of you, to ask yourself, how do I feel about this? Does this really interest me? Is this alive for me? Does it have some sort of deeper meaning, connecting me to something deeper? And I'm going to use a very mundane example coming from tonight. So, only a few people seem to be stepping up to prepare a place where we can all get a little real with ourselves for a short period of time. So, if you come here with any regularity, do you want to be accountable for your taking your place and caring for the temple? So at the end of the practice period at the dojo, I wanted to clean the mat. I wanted to do that. I did not resent doing it. I did not need anybody to notice me doing it. I wanted to clean the temple, because I had felt the benefit of the temple, and I wanted to acknowledge that in some way for my benefit. I was not doing it for the benefit of others in that way. Others were supposed to benefit from it, because you don't want the grimy mat when you're having your face stuck in it quite hard. but the point was my sense of my I was balancing something in me. Does this make sense to you? When I left the achieving world at age 40, and I spent that next year as best I could cleaning the temple. I went around to everybody, as far as I could have access to them, and sat with them in order to clear up anything that I had been in relation to those people, because I'd had a sort of larger role in a lot of people's lives, a larger than life role in some ways. I've played many different roles with people. I've not just been a leader. I've been kind of like a father figure, a mother figure, a therapist, a spiritual director, everything in the world. That was just my nature. And I really wanted to clean the temple. That was very important to me. And I spent a long time before I ever actually decided to leave imagining how I might clean the temple. I did not want to leave a mess behind. That was important to me. I left messes behind anyway, right? Because you can only do what you can do. But I, so far as I could, I carried out my role. There's times I haven't done that since then. There are times before then I haven't done that as well as I would have wished. And I see the suffering and when I haven't done that. So I wish to be accountable for my own sense of well-being. And in being accountable, that is to the benefit of others. You follow the logic chain here. When you hear that, how does, and I mean, the immediate here is the Sangha. Like, even though you may not be that committed, you don't really want to get to know people, you just want to come here and sit. If you participate in taking the benefit, at some point do you want to do something? If it's twice a year you come up and do the setup, you would do the setup because you want to be the person that does the setup, because for your benefit of feeling good to yourself in this way. This is not to coerce you in doing this. That is of no value at all, being coerced. But to awaken you to a way to relate to wherever that is. It may be with a friend that is mostly in this relationship with this particular friend. They have more than you, and therefore they give more than you give in a situation. It's appropriate in many ways for my value system. The one who has the most gives the most. That always made sense to me. And I'm saying that as a person who many times was the one who had the most. So, I mean, for years, I bought every meal for people because I had the most. That all made sense to me. So I'm not saying that from some point of view of justifying, receiving, but rather justifying giving. But nonetheless, so there's times when we are receiving, and receiving is enough. But there's also times we want to take responsibility for ourselves in relation to what we have to give. For this parami, for being available for the attainment, for this ripening of the paramis that happen on their own. Again, there's not a Ten Commandment kind of vibe to this. It's a very different vibe. It's a
vow.
What?
A vow.
It's vow? Mm-hmm. Yes, it could be a vow. Yes, think of it as a vow. It certainly has a ritualized feeling to me. It's not a law. It's just a sense of balancing that really feels good in this way. So a couple more comments and we have to stop. Where are we? Okay, you can. Both these people had their hand up first. Let's go back there. Start with the gentleman. And then.
Thank you. So my question is again about this woman that is on the street. So what I find sometimes, and I'm thinking of a particular incident a few days ago when an elderly woman was there who seemed unintimidating and quite sober and asked for money for food, I forget exactly what she said. And I wanted to give it to her, but I found it, I wasn't able to, or I didn't at any rate. And I'm this has come up for me before, and I think it's kind of conflicting with the dominant values of American or Western society, more about character.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not, enormously important, but it comes up every now and then. I don't know quite how to deal with it.
Well, and this becomes your ongoing question, and sometimes you may do it one way, and sometimes you may do it another. And I don't want to reduce this to a question of whether or not we give to, people on the street. But there's arguments on every direction. I can construct very sound arguments to never give, to always give, to give under, all of those sorts of things. And it's, and so, look at the larger question tonight, and then from the larger question, see if that affects the more narrow question. And then if you'll give to the person next to the microphone for a moment.
Hi, Philip. So I was interested in what you said earlier on about generosity, and I may not be wording right, in the face of scarcity.
Yes.
Is that perceived, you yourself perceive scarcity in the world and therefore don't act in a generous manner, or you talk, was the context different?
So the scarcity can sometimes that you believe that you have a feeling of scarcity and therefore you can't be generous because there's a sense of scarcity. And this is an easy example of this is in relation to recognition. Somehow there will people recognition is one of the easiest things to give to people organizationally. It doesn't cost any dollars, and organizations are hurting for dollars. And yet I'm amazed at how often people are so parsimonious in relation to giving recognition. They won't give praise. They won't recognize an effort. And I go, why don't you recognize that effort? It's easy, but there's some sense of scarcity. Well, if they get praised, then I don't have enough praise for myself. I won't get the praise because there's only some limited amount of recognition. Maybe that's true, but I don't experience it that way. Likewise, in relation to if just generosity of time, I've only got so much time. Oh, therefore, I can't come in early on Sunday and set up because my Sundays are, you know, that's my one day I have off or whatever it may be. But and so that sense of scarcity precludes you actually offering the question to yourself of, well, how do I want to relate to the places where I receive? Because the scarcity is I don't have enough to give a prior because of a general attitude, not the specific, because maybe you should never do Sunday evenings because, in fact, that's true for you. But if you start with this general attitude, you don't get the chance to actually explore for yourself. A lot of times that's out of our vulnerability. We have so many conditioned habitual vulnerabilities and we take them as realities. But they're just conditioned mind states. The sense of I don't have enough, I don't have enough time, I can't fit in, I don't know how to do things, and I'll make a big mess if I hang things up. Now that would be one of mine. Mine would be, oh, I'm willing to do it, but I need something that, like, I can scrub the mat. That's simple enough. I can do that right. But if it involves something complex, I'll go, oh, I'm not going to do it right, if it's mechanically. So we each can have our sense of vulnerabilities around this, and it is actually stopping a development of this power is being available to. And so I use that word accountability with some trepidation, but also to challenge you a bit. And the room changed. The feeling of the room changed as soon as I said that word, accountability. People that were having one kind of a time, a good time maybe, then they weren't having such a good time. But it's not like a law. It's not like a law, accountability to the law. It's accountability to what you value, who you want to be, who you want to be to yourself. Not to others, but to yourself. That's feeling of that. And what I'm suggesting, and I'll stop with this at that time, is that there's something to be discovered at whatever age you are of one more level of letting go, this non-attachment, that would allow this feeling of relatedness to the paramis that will actually feel good to you, that will feel you will a feeling of more aliveness, a more sense of this, what I call the through line, this sense of one moment being connected to another moment. That mindfulness brings us into the moment, but it does not necessarily by itself connect us to the next moment because we so split and all. Food for thought, maybe later on we'll have a further examination of this at a future time. So if we can close our eyes for a moment here and now come into our closing evening.